Welcome to Signs of Life, Exploring Survival of Consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Raymond Moody, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran. And I know that a lot of our listening audience is anxious to hear Dr. Moody. He has written 11 books, and he's quite the figure when it comes to the field of near-death experiences. But, you know, as I continue to read these books, and a couple of themes keep coming up. I mean, one, you know, on the subject of science, there are so many things that we were brought up to believe and schooled and educated in, and we took them as gospel, and then lo and behold, as the years go by, we find out, hey, that's not really true.
Just a theory.
The other thing that really strikes me is in my readings is just how much the ancient civilizations knew, you know, especially when it came to the afterlife. I mean, they had cultures that were based upon continuing after this physical, you know, realm.
And they didn't need science, and they didn't need school to learn that. It was kind of inner within them, parts of who they were.
Yeah, you know, you look at the, you know, the cave paintings and the hieroglyphics, and they show... Well, I guess even Dr. Moody will be able to talk about that. You know, some of them show light, you know, people at the deathbed and seeing a light. And what do people experiences talk about today, you know, seeing a light? There are a lot of depictions of people leaving their bodies, you know. And just a little bit too coincidental. I mean, how would they know that, you know, then?
Unless they were doing it.
Yeah,
and here we are trillions of years later, and we're trying to first learn how to do what we should have been knowing how to do all along.
You know, a lot of these new scientists that are coming out with different theories, you know, they're poo-pooed, as you like to say, you know, by a lot of the mainstream colleagues. But yet, those same people that are being disregarded now, you know, give it a, you know, 10, 15-year period, and they may be hailed as a genius.
You know? I think you're already seeing that. I mean, Dr. Moody is a great example of that, and the work that he's done over the years. I mean, and also we see a lot of new books coming out written by people who would have never believed in this stuff, and then one simple event in their life makes them ask that question. And when they start asking, their journey takes them to their own personal experiences. It's kind of interesting how the world is shifting, and I think it's going to come a lot sooner than you think.
Yeah. I know, on the science end, you know, we're all used to sitting in science class and looking at those models of the atom and seeing the nucleus and the electrons and everything we believed was solid matter, you know, and now, you know, we're finding out that, lo and behold, that there's, you know, 95% of the atom is empty space, and things that this table is actually mostly empty space.
Right. And how about when they showed us the bell jar and created a vacuum and told us in no uncertain terms nothing can exist in a vacuum?
Right.
And now we know the reverse is true.
Not only that, the vacuum may hold the key to our energy production, you know, somewhere down the line. That the people are already working on that because there's a tremendous amount of power that can be harnessed from these holes in dark matter. And also, people, when it comes to telepathic and psi experiences, you know, it could be that one theory is that this, you know, vacuum, so to speak, or this zero-point field or whatever you want to call it, is, you know, the medium by which information travels, you know. So, you know, we're at the fringe, and it makes you laugh sometimes when you read back in history and some of the great scientists that we've had throughout history, how they lived their life to the death, you know, just persecuted and ridiculed. And then a generation or two later, you know, what a shame, you know, for them.
And over and over and over again, it repeats itself. It's the most amazing thing, and that just shows you how people just are prone to be close-minded. It's a shame.
Yeah, well, when we come back from the break, Dr. Moody is one that certainly can speak to that. I mean, he was studying after the afterlife, really. You call it near-death experiences, but what in actuality was studying another life after physical death. And he was doing it at a time when a lot of his colleagues didn't want to hear about it. So he can enlighten us on that. So I encourage everybody to stay with us for this short break. And when we come back, we will have Dr. Raymond Moody. So stay with us.
Did you know that there is an abundance of scientific evidence from well-credentialed scientists suggesting an afterlife? You now have an opportunity to learn about this evidence firsthand at Forever Family Foundation's conference in Fort Myers, Florida, November 13th and 14th. If you have suffered the loss of a loved one or are simply curious about what happens after we die, don't miss this chance to see scientists and certified mediums share their knowledge and insights in lectures, workshops, and demonstrations, including small group medium readings. Call 631-425-7707 or visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Raymond Moody. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
Well, we're proud to have Dr. Raymond Moody with us. Dr. Moody is both an MD and a PhD. He's considered to be the dean of all near-death experience researchers. Actually, the near-death experience is a term he coined in the late 70s. He's authored 11 books, which have sold a few, 20 million copies to be exact. His book, Life After Life, completely changed the way we view death and dying. He's lectured around the world on death, dying, and grief. He maintains a private practice of philosophical counseling. In addition to his writing and his lectures, he also trains hospice workers, clergy, psychologists, nurses, and doctors on matters of grief recovery and dying. He's the recipient of many awards. He's a frequent media guest. You've probably seen him on TV a few times. And his new book is called Glimpses of Eternity, Sharing a Loved One's Passage from This Life to the Next. Welcome, Dr. Moody.
Well, thank you, folks, so much for having me on the program. I'm really happy to be with you.
Well, it's our honor. And, you know, I've read some of your books, and, you know, and the recent one, Glimpses of Eternity, is fascinating. It takes us in a little bit different direction. But what struck me is that your path is quite a bit different from many of the MDs that study the near-death experience now, in that you were researching this phenomenon before you went to medical school. So, you know, the question is, did your near-death experience studies provide the impetus for you actually deciding to go to medical school?
You know, I think that's really hard to say. I was, I got interested in philosophy in high school, and when I went to UVA in 1962 at the age of 18 for my first year, I immediately decided to be a philosophy major, and in reading Plato's Republic, which is, by the way, about life after death and near-death experiences. As a matter of fact, the Republic ends with an account of a near-death experience that Plato obviously thought was very, very important and took this in a very solemn way. And not having been raised religious, I just, you know, it never occurred to me to think about an afterlife. But reading about, reading Plato's argument that it is the most important question of existence really did convince me. And so that was in 62. And then 3 years later, in 1965, I was a third-year philosophy student at UVA and met a living human person, Dr. George Ritchie, who at that time was a psychiatry professor at the University of Virginia. And he had had such an experience, and I took the opportunity to listen to him, and it totally changed my mind about the afterlife question. I thought, you know, the fact that this very wonderful man, George Ritchie, to this day is the finest human being I ever met in my life. And this really woke me up to the importance of this. But then I went on and I got a PhD in philosophy and started teaching philosophy in 1969 in a university, and very quickly began to hear these stories from my students, because by that time these these experiences were very common due to the improvement in resuscitation technology. So, yes, all of that was even before I went to medical school. And then, so when I went to medical school in 1972, it already came in the context of, you know, 10 years of awareness of this phenomenon and several years of intense investigation of it.
Now, you must have had a little bit of trepidation. I mean, going to medical school and knowing the attitude of many, you know, so-called mainstream, you know, physicians and, you know, scientists, and here you come and you're studying, you know, what happens after we die. But I was a little surprised from reading your book that you were, I guess, rather warmly received in medical school. I mean, did that surprise
you? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I had been... because I had been the PhD in philosophy route and then taught for 3 years in a university, I obviously then a lot of people that I grew up with were in the same town of Macon, Georgia, were ahead of me in medical school. And they knew about what I was doing, and by the time I got to the Medical College of Georgia, they had spread the word among the faculty that this student was coming in September who had investigated this, and literally within the first couple of weeks of medical school, 8 very nice professors reached out to me and either told me about their own stories when they had almost died, or talked to me about patients they had who had had such experiences. So, yes, I mean, they really encouraged me in my study of this.
Yeah, and you certainly presented a, you know, a safe and open-minded forum for them to discuss it. And, you know, you're a professional. You certainly are not going to judge them, and you're not going to think they're crazy. So I guess talking to you was a big relief to them.
Well, it was a mutual thing, I think, because back in the years when I was first interviewing this, the public awareness of it was very, very low. And people just didn't realize this. And so when this happened to people, which was actually a fairly common occurrence, the people would begin to think, oh, you know, perhaps I'm the only person to whom this has happened. And so the experience had changed their lives and meant so much to them, and yet they felt embarrassed or uncomfortable talking about it. So when I began to interview these early people I talked with, I think I was able to be helpful to them, and after they would give me their account, I would reassure them that they are not alone and that other people had said essentially identical things about this. So yes, I think back in that era, people were comforted to realize that far from being alone, that it was shaping up that this was a very common experience, which we now know from studies that have been done by physicians all over the world, that this is an experience that is fairly common in people who come very close to death but recover.
Right. And most of the book, In Glimpses of Eternity, deals with shared death experiences. Now, I guess most of our audience is now familiar with the term near-death experience, but I suspect that very few are aware of what a shared death experience is. Can you tell us a little bit about what a shared death experience is?
Yes, Bob. You know, what I can tell you with complete confidence is that all of the elements that make up what we call near-death experiences, when people almost die but recover. For example, getting out of the body and becoming aware of a light, passing through a tunnel, seeing one's deceased relatives coming to greet you, and panoramic memory of seeing all the events of one's life in a panorama. All of those phenomena also occur to people at the bedside of the of dying loved ones. For example, when grandma dies, the bystanders may see what a transparent replica of grandma seem to leave the body and rise up above it. Or occasionally bystanders will tell us that as their loved one died, they themselves felt that they left their body and accompanied their dying loved one partway toward this light. Or people may, in the room where someone is dying, may say that around the time of death, the room lights up in this astonishing light of comfort and peace, which they find very hard to describe. And bystanders will frequently talk about seeing or sensing the spirits of the now deceased person coming into the room to guide them away. And most remarkably of all, there are also cases in which bystanders will say that they empathically co-live the panoramic life review of the person who has passed away. And that, to me, is just, I mean, this is, I think that two things I want to say about this phenomenon. Number one, I've known about it for a long time. I first heard one of these shared death experiences from one of my own medical school professors during my first quarter in medical school, and when she had been resuscitating her mother who had passed away. This physician said that as her mother died, she herself, the physician, felt herself rise up, and she viewed the resuscitation from above, saw herself trying to resuscitate her mother's body, became aware of her mother there with her, to use her exact words, now in spirit form, unquote, and said that she said goodbye to her mother and saw her mother recede into this light and join up with these spirits of her deceased loved ones, who seemed to be sort of coming out of the light. Mm-hmm. And so when I first started hearing these in the early 70s, it was almost exclusively from medical personnel, doctors and nurses, for example, who would very commonly tell you that when they saw a patient die, that something would rise up above the patient. This is often described as a sort of form, maybe roundish in shape, golden, grayish color arising off the body of somebody who had just died. And all of these things, I heard of lights in the room and so on. But what has happened in the intervening years is that the hospital practice has totally changed. I remember when I started medical school in 72, the standard thing that people did was that when the doctors would see that the patient was dying, the doctors and nurses would come in and escort the family out on the somewhat patronizing attitude, I think, that this would be too overwhelming for the family members, so the doctors had to go in and be the heroes and spare the family that. But what has happened in the intervening years is now that this has totally changed. And by now, these days, the more common practice is that as the patient is dying, the doctors and nurses encourage the patient's family to be there with them until the end. And what this is bringing about is an just a tidal wave of these empathic death experiences, which I am now hearing predominantly from the actual family members and loved ones who were present when someone died. Mm. And I think that why this is important is that if you think about it, this pretty much knocks the foundations out from under the argument that these, people say, for example, in the near-death experience, they say, well, sure, the reason why this person had this experience is that as they almost died, the oxygen was deprived to their brain. And so the dying brain put up this hallucinatory show, which they interpret as the near-death experience. But you see, now we know that all of these same phenomena are common also to bystanders at the bedside of someone else's death. And the bystanders are not ill or injured. In other words, it's not a situation in which the oxygen flow to their brain is compromised. So You see, this raises a major difficulty for the common so-called skeptical objection to this, because...
Absolutely. It's you have perfectly healthy and lucid people sharing the same experiences as the person who's dying. And of course, you were battling a lot of these objections and arguments to the near-death experience throughout the years, you know. But, I mean, science has shown that people suffering from, you know, oxygen deprivation and hallucinations don't have clear and lucid thoughts that you were hearing from your patients. So, and now to have the shared death experience, and I think now that you mention it, it sounds very plausible that we started seeing more people report the near-death experience because our techniques and resuscitation improved, and now there's another dynamic going on where, you know, people are becoming educated in death and dying, so that there's more people around when the people are actually passing. So it's both have seem to have a progression, and it's very it's certainly as you point out, it has tremendous implications down the road in our attempt to perhaps, you know, prove that we do survive our physical death.
I think so, Bob, and you know, one policy I've made with all of my books, which has worked out pretty well, is that I don't publish anything until I am absolutely sure from my experience that anyone who is sincere, who reads about this, will be able to confirm it for themselves just by asking around among their own family members and acquaintances, because these things are now so common that any sincere investigator, that is anybody who, you know, is really just open to seeing what is, can confirm all these findings for themselves, because these things are just that common now. And when this information comes out more openly, and it's sort of building already, I think, but when this comes fully into public consciousness, I think that we will be into an entirely different level of the rational research into the afterlife question.
One thing I wanted to ask you, and I've noticed this both from, you know, personal experience and a lot of anecdotal evidence, that many people who are terminally ill, they very often have a day of great coherency and awareness.
Yes, just before they die.
Yeah, it could be, you know, just before, it could be a couple of days before, and it's it's uncanny.
It is. And you know, it's that phenomenon, Bob, has a name. They called it, in the old days, they called it fey, F-E-Y. And if you look that that word up in the dictionary, you'll see that it has quite a number of meanings. But the central meaning is that fey is a state of intense vividness in consciousness. An intense lucidity of consciousness that occurs shortly before the death. And when you've seen this, as I know that many people listening have no doubt seen this among their own family members, but it is, as you say, Bob, when you see this, it is just uncanny. I mean, people like Grandma will be lying there in the hospital room for literally weeks with no sign of consciousness whatsoever, and then just before she dies, it's like she comes back. And if you have seen this, you know exactly what I mean by saying that in this state, people seem more alive than alive. I mean, it's uncanny.
Yeah,
and they often give a message to everybody. They go around and tell everybody at the bedside something, and then just keel over. A couple of years ago, I was talking with an oncologist in North Carolina who had seen this with one of his patients some years before, and he said that he and all the family members were standing around the bedside of this man whose his body was dead in the bed, and all of a sudden the man just came back to and spent a couple of minutes telling everybody what should be done and, you know, what had been left undone and what needed to be taken care of. And then he just turned over and went, you know, died again. And the surgeon told me, or the oncologist told me, he said, you know, if those other people hadn't have been standing there and saw the same thing, he said, I would have thought I was having an hallucination.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I, you know, we've had those, that experience, and I always thought, and I know when more recently when Fran's mom was passing, she had one of those days, and you know, I was at the hospital, and I called her. I said, you know, you just got to get down here. You just can't believe this. You know, this woman who the day before was incoherent and just you would say not in her in this world anymore, and I'm having a perfectly lucid conversation.
Yes, that's amazing.
You know, the day before that, she was talking with many deceased relatives. So you know, we always looked at that and said, well, in our view, she was sort of straddling two dimensions.
Yes, a man told me one time, he said, reflecting on his wife's condition like that, he said, as he looked back on it, he said, it was almost as though she already had one foot in another world, as he said.
Yeah. The phenomenon of sharing the life review is really astounding, you know, where the witnesses to the person that is about to pass, you know, actually goes through that person's life. I mean, do you have any thoughts about how this, the mechanism that allowed this? I mean, it seems as if, you know, some sort of telepathy is in play, but...
Yeah, Bob, I don't know, but if you come up with an explanation, let me know right away. Because, you know, I am similarly baffled by this. I mean, this is... And I can absolutely guarantee you that any researcher is going to be able to find cases of this. And you're right. What does this mean?
Mm. I mean, and also, you have many examples in Glimpses of Eternity of people describing seeing the room itself, the physical room, you know, more
changes shape,
you know.
Yes.
And it's not just, sometimes it's more than one person. It could be two or three people that are there, and they all see the same thing.
That's right. That happened at my mother's death, Bob. And as in 1994, my mother died in June of 94, and my wife and I had been there with her in the hospital for 2 weeks prior to her death. But at the moment of her death, from a deep comatose state that had gone on for 2 days, she suddenly rallied, and very audibly she said twice to all of us, I love you. And when this was going on, I mean, I don't have any words for this except to say that the room changed configuration. You know, a hospital room is like a cubicle or like a rectangular solid. But the room seemed to change shape such that I was... I don't really have a good way of describing it, except to say that it was as though I was in a double funnel, like the one on the top and one on the bottom, and I was kind of somewhere in the middle.
Hmm.
And the light in the room became this unearthly light, this beautiful, comforting, peaceful light. And my wife had similar experiences there in the room with me, and so did my sister, since the presence of my father, who had died 18 months before. So, yes, these can happen to more than one individual in the same occurrence.
Mm. And I think it's fair to say that it might have something to do with the three of you were not closed-minded to this. You were open to it, you know. So I would imagine if skeptical person was there in the room with you with their arms crossed, they may not have shared that experience.
Well, you know, that is an interesting thought, Bob, and I've wondered about that myself. And yet at the same time, like you have too, I'm sure I've seen many cases of people who are mentally dead set against this, but then it does happen to them and they get just as impressed by anyone else. I've had quite a number of people who came to me after these shared death experiences saying that they had just totally dismissed the idea of an afterlife until this happened to them. So I think that we're in for exciting times very soon, that we're going to see, I think within 5 or 10 years, we will have a total shift in the way that we reason about and debate about and investigate the question of life after death.
And I hope that you're right. We have been talking with Dr. Raymond Moody and his new book, Glimpses of Eternity. The website is www.lifeafterlife.com. We're going to go and take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll continue this fascinating discussion with Dr. Moody, so please stay with us.
Did you know that there is an abundance of scientific evidence from well-credentialed scientists suggesting an afterlife? You now have an opportunity to learn about this evidence firsthand at Forever Family Foundation's conference in Fort Myers, Florida, November 13th and 14th. If you have suffered the loss of a loved one, or are simply curious about what happens after we die, don't miss this chance to see scientists and certified mediums share their knowledge and insights in lectures, workshops, and demonstrations, including small group medium readings. Call 631-425-7707 or visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.winbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Heal your loss and grief through these spiritual hypnotherapy CDs. Titles include Talking with the Dead, The Inner Healer, Meeting Your Higher Self, and A Past Life Regression and Between Life Exploration. Dr. Holly Holmes Meredith is director of HCH Institute for Hypnotherapy and Psychospiritual Trainings. Go to hypnotherapytraining.com to sample and order her CDs. These CDs will empower you in your healing and transformation.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest here tonight is Dr. Raymond Moody. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. And with these hard times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find your items in one of the 800-plus online stores, sites, hotels, that list goes on, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please, take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. And you can also show us that you care by participating in our Holidays Past raffle and win a one-hour medium phone reading. You'll be one of the five lucky winners. You could also be two of the winners, three of the winners, four, because you stay in until all five prizes have been pulled. The mediums for this Holidays Past raffle are Bobby Allison, Angelina Diana, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, and Kathy Tao. It's just $5 a chance. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and you can buy your chances there. Bob?
Okay. And thanks for staying with us, Dr. Moody. And the number here is 1-888-815-9756. What I wanted to ask is that we all know that near-death experiencers often report significant life changes afterwards. So they have to lose a fear of death. They become more spiritual. There is lifelong lasting effects. Does the early research on the shared death experience show that they have these significant after effects?
Yes, indeed, and especially I think. It gives people that same sort of conviction from personal experience that what we call death is just a transition into some other reality. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that absolutely it does, that it has very similar effects on people.
Yeah. I know that another quite a number of experiencers report some having enhanced psi ability, precognition, telepathy, things of that sort. Any info with the shared death experiencers?
Bob, I've talked with literally hundreds of these people going back for decades now, so I can't say for sure no. But I don't remember a case like that. In other words, somebody might have said it, and I just didn't register with me or whatever, but I, as far as I know, I haven't heard any statement like that. Now, it does, it wakes people up in the sense that it gets them wondering about things that before they had not thought about.
Hmm.
But in terms of that that kind of enhancement of the intuitive powers, thus far I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question that you probably, it's probably the most often question that you get asked, and I'm going to ask it anyway, because people always ask it of us. You know, when we talk of mediumship and communication, after-death communication, and people say, well, you know, how come everybody doesn't get one, and how come I don't get one? And
yes.
With near-death experiences, you know, how come not everybody gets one? And I was at my relative's bedside, and I didn't see anything. So any thoughts to why some people have these experiences and some not?
Well, Bob, as you know, that is a very crucial and critical question. And I am unfortunately in the position where I have to say, I don't know.
Right.
And this is something that has baffled me for a long time because, you know, even back in the late 60s and early 70s, I was talking all the time with people who had been to the brink of death and, you know, just as close as these other people were to death, and yet remembered absolutely nothing. And I've never been able to see any difference that distinguishes those who do from those who don't.
Hmm.
Now, we know some things that are not the factor. In other words, we can tell you that it doesn't seem to have anything to do, for example, with the person's prior religious commitment or with the particular illness that's involved in the death or the age of the person. We have very young and very old people who've had shared death experiences, and others in those same groups who did not have shared death experiences under the same circumstances. So that part is a mystery. We just don't know.
Right. Well, sometimes people make the mistake of making the assumption that, for instance, with after-death communication, that the love is not, you know, wasn't strong enough, or even like this with a shared death experience, you know, that they didn't have a close enough bond. But I suspect that's not the case.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that the fact is we just don't know right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of things about these experiences that we still don't know, and that's partly the reason why we stay in it. You know, it continues to offer a lot of challenges, I think, for people who enjoy trying to figure out mysteries that are just very hard to put into everyday words, I think.
Yeah. What I found fascinating in reading the book was that we know that near-death experiencers often talk about reaching a certain point and then being told not to go further and then return. And as you described many accounts, and you relate the stories of people in shared death experiences who go along on that journey, you know,
with
the person that's dying, and the person that's dying may continue on, and the shared experiencer is told, no, far enough
and
come
back. Got to go back. That's right.
That must have been amazing to you. So.
It is. It's I'm continue to be amazed by this. I think that I've been interested in this for a long time, and back in 94, I was getting ready with a group of other psychologists and doctors to do a systematic study of these shared death experiences, but right at the time that was coming together was when I had my own experience with my mother, and since I am driven very largely in my professional life by curiosity, that kind of having the experience itself kind of derailed my curiosity and left me with something I had to integrate in an entirely different way. But in the passages of years on this, I've seen that that this added feature of the what we call the near-death experience, that it can be shared by bystanders at the bedside. That's a startling new piece of information, I think, that has to change the way that we debate about this subject.
Mm. You know, another thing that I read that I was not aware of. I mean, you talk a little bit in the book about the knowledge that about death that some of the ancient civilizations had, and you talked about it. There was an ancient practice where slaves and volunteers were nearly suffocated to death in coffins. And then
That's what I'm told.
Then they were asked about their experiences, you know. So
that's right.
And that seemed to shape the views of the entire civilization. That's pretty interesting.
Yes, yes. You know, Paul Perry, who is my co-writer and contributed wonderfully to this book, because as you can probably tell, I tend to dwell in the realm of abstractions, whereas Paul is a very down-to-earth person, and he had researched that about the Egyptian practices and so on. And I know that all over the world there has been in different societies the practice called dream incubation, where the newly appointed ruler will have some sort of experience in which, from their point of view, it was a contact with the higher level of existence. And I know, for example, in ancient Japan, the emperor, during his coronation ceremony, would have to lie in a ritual bed, very much like those in the ancient Greek tradition at the temples of Asclepius. And the idea is that during this temple sleep, as they called it, they would go away into another realm and learn information. So these things that have been reported from cultures all over the world invariably, I think, have a deep psychological reality to them.
Mm. One of the things that I'm intrigued and excited about is the potential for research in shared death experiences. Now, we know with NDEs, it's a very difficult thing to research because, frankly, you never know when somebody's going to have be close to death. But
right.
but let's say we're in a hospice setting.
Yes, that's right. Many more possibilities are presented for systematic investigation, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that before we, I know we're nearing the end of our time and we've been a little neglectful in taking some calls. Would you mind taking a call from a
listener? Great, sure.
Okay, we have, who do we have, Fran?
We have Diane from Long Island.
Okay. Diane? Hello?
Diane from Long Island.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Dr. Moody, I just wanted to thank you. You just spoke about hospice. I lost my mom in March of this past year, and I had the privilege of being with her when she passed. And what made it so much easier for me was I happened to see your movie, Life After Life.
Yeah.
And I was able to sit with her. She did so many of the things that the people mentioned in that movie. And it was such a privilege for me to usher her out of this life. She ushered me in, and I was there to usher her out.
Oh,
and
my goodness, how wonderful.
Because of your movie, it made it so much easier for me. I was in control, of myself, and I was able to talk her through it. And she had the most beautiful, she taught me, my mother taught me a lot of things in my life, but what she really did is taught me how to die. And it was the most beautiful experience. And I know that might sound terrible. I don't mean that it's good
No.
that she's gone, but the fact that her death was so peaceful, her crossover was so peaceful, was largely due to the fact because of your movie, because I was able to do what I needed to do.
Thank you so much,
Diane.
So
thank you.
Sweet.
I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you so much for that.
Thank you very much for that.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Diane.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, I guess that after doing this for a few decades now, that must warm your heart when you make a difference.
It really does. It really does. That's, to me, been the best outcome of all this work, is that, a lot of stories like that and people like that. So it's been a wonderful blessing.
Now, I know that you have an exciting new lecture series that's coming out, it'll probably come. You'll probably begin sometime in January, and I would imagine that you'll be posting some of the details on the website of Life.
Yes, Life After Life. That will all be up there when that gets straightened out. It will be sometime in early 2010. I'll be instituting a new series of lectures and lecture tour.
Okay, and there's also, if you want to keep informed on that and read more about Dr. Moody, make sure you go to lifeafterlife.com. The new book, Glimpses of Eternity, I would recommend, and you can, there's an Amazon link to that book on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org. As well as
if you're on our email list, you got it this morning.
Yeah, there's a link in the emails that went out to the membership, and there's also links to, I think, four or five other books by Dr. Moody. And you're still maintaining a private practice, no?
I do. I'm the grief counseling is something that's very important for me. It's something that it's something I do because I think that everybody needs, I think, to give back by doing something that few other people want to do. That's part of my philosophy, and I think that grief counseling is something that's a very painful thing to do, and many people, not many people want to do it, so that's my commitment to humanity, I guess you would say, is to try to maintain a grief counseling practice.
Yeah. Well, I certainly there are very few people that are more eminently qualified for that, so that's a great service that you're doing. I'd also tell you that we were intrigued by some of your early work with psychomantiums, and
yes. Actually, well, this was
I'm sorry, but we actually with Diane Archangel's help, we built the psychomantium.
Oh, great! Great.
So that was and perhaps when you join us, you could tell us briefly, you know, what listeners, what the psychomantium is.
Well, basically, this goes back to the ancient Greek society where they had these subterranean institutions known as oracles of the dead, and they had various procedures there that would guide people to have an experience during which they would actually seem to see and converse with the spirit of a departed loved one, and this was in a full state of waking awareness. And so to make a long story short, the reason I have been intrigued by this is that these institutions were absolutely vital to the formation of the entire Western way of thinking. Even the logic, code of logic that we have, ultimately came out of these oracles of the dead. And so when I found that one of these places had been excavated back in the 80s, I looked up the archaeological report and brushed up on my German so that I could read it. And by what the archaeologists reported that they found, and coupling that with my knowledge of other ancient Greek works, I was able to figure out what they did and to set up a chamber in which it's actually quite possible to guide people through an experience during which they actually experience an apparition of their departed loved ones. It's really quite remarkable. And as you know, it's been replicated now by numerous other psychologists who have done this and gotten the same results that I did.
That's true. And I want to thank you so much for joining us. We're at the end of our time, but I wish it was longer. I would certainly hope that you'll do us the honor of joining us again.
Oh, my goodness. Please, let's do it. I'd love to.
Okay. And right. Again, be sure to go to lifeafterlife.com and check on that lecture series that's coming up and the book, Glimpses of Eternity. Thank you, Dr. Moody, and have a good evening.
Thank you both. It's wonderful being with you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And prayer for the Gulf. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Matsuru Emoto. And with that, we'd like to say...
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.